Thank you for coming to this spontaneous Q&A. Have another?
Yes.
Ms. Wren, in her writings, often talked about one must judge. One must look and make judgments about things. What was her view on the differentiation between judging and being judgmental about people?
Well, none, if I understand you, because people that are accused of being judgmental are usually accused that way because they're judging. They're prone to judging. And she was not only prone to judging, she actively advocated judging. So she would never use judgmental as a pejorative term. Never. Now, what you could say is that she believed that your moral judgment should be rational and contextual and not, you know, dogmatic, out of context, where, you know, if somebody utters one sentence you disagree with, you denounce them. But she did not use any such word as judgmental to characterize it. She would say judgmental versus irrational, amoral, fanatic. That's it.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask a question about one of your answers, the worst trend in philosophy being religion. My question is, what about...
Is that you, Ed?
Yes, that's me.
I can't only see a tie.
Okay.
I don't think you're wearing a tie.
Don't have a tie. No. So my question is, what about secular evils such as communism and Nazism? And I realize Nazism had Kant, of course, in the background, but why wouldn't irrationalism be the fundamental problem causing all of those things?
Well, I think that's a really excellent question. I don't know how to tell you. I regard all of those totalitarian, modern secular totalitarian movements as simply a rehash of the medieval totalitarianism, and that they're equally, despite their emphasis on economics and materialism and biology, etc., they're equally supernaturalist. They equally dismiss this world as unreal. They equally reject the evidence of the senses, and it's just simply a rewriting in secular terms of the same exact thing that was held by the medievals. Now, I quote, you know, I analyze specifically Marx, the extent to which he is what's technically what would be called an idealist, despite his materialism. I give some really excellent examples. From Engels, you know, he has a view that history is governed by these dialectic laws, and that's reality, and then there's the corrupt world that hasn't caught up to reality yet. And I think it was Louis XIV, but I'm not 100% sure, but it's in the book. It was asked, according to your theory, such and such Louis XIV should never have existed. And he said, no, Louis XIV existed, but he wasn't real. They had just exactly the way the Christians did. There was the two realities, this lower one and the higher one, and the higher one is the dialectic process and the laws, and the lower one is the early stages of reality trying to catch up to perfection. It's exactly the same. But if you, so in my book, those are all called M's. They're not called skepticism.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the topics that came up earlier in the conference was the state of youth today. And I was wondering if you had any comments about youth today in America and what that might say about our future.
You know, I have no context. I have no contact with youth today in America. I can't think of. The closest contact I have with youth today, I guess, is honor. The sequel. I have a lot of questions. Let me put it this way. I got a lot of questions on the podcast. And I get a lot of them are better questions than I would have expected. And I've made clear several times that I give favoritism to, you know, questions from younger people. So a number of questions come from people who say they're 12 and 14 and 15. If that's true, I'm really staggered because they write and think in such an advanced, literate way that, you know, the world is safe. A lot of them are from Australia for some reason. That if Australia can produce that many teenagers. So all I can say is my opinion of judging from the podcast, is positive, definitely. On the other hand, I never go near the, what do you call it? Not just Facebook, but that whole
Twitter,
blogosphere or whatever, where people talk back and forth.
Twitter.
Whatever it is, I never go near that because
social media.
I went into it once or twice, just briefly, and I decided to move to France. And then I found out that it was there too. So I never go deeper than my own email, which is pre-censored before I go. So I can't give you an honest answer. Yeah.
Hi, Leonard.
Oh, sorry.
It's Jack. You can. I know you can't see me, but you can just visualize.
I don't know which Jack.
Jack.
Oh, Jack Crawford.
Has anybody asked you to write a biography?
To write a biography?
Of you.
Of whom?
You.
Of me?
Or is anybody doing it?
I tell you, I wouldn't write a shopping list if I could get out of it.
Hold on.
I have finished writing. The dim book killed me. My interest in anything to do with language at all. So, you know, if somebody else wants to, they should wait till I'm dead because then they won't know the ending.
I was thinking someone else would write a biography of you.
Well, not if I have anything to say about it.
Okay.
Well, I guess this is a connected question. I'll just take one or two of these. Over the course of your life, have you had any real-life heroes other than individuals associated with objectivism? Well, only in a partial way. When I was in school, I admired a number of my classmates who seemed to be happy, confident, at ease with people, great in playing hockey. In other words, all the things which I wasn't. But, you know, that was just transient. Well, I was finding myself. When I grew up, again, I could admire someone, even call them heroic, in a specific context. Creative work, heroic action, a lot of things. Like, for instance, I just think of that diver, you know, the one who hit his head on the cement and turned around and came up and kept going. I think that's a heroic act. I mean, how many people would just lie there with their head cracked open and say, well, I don't feel well. But I can't say he's a life. I think the whole civilization of Greece is heroic. But, you know, that's an overview of a whole civilization. If it came down to one specific person, it could only be Ayn Rand. No one ever else. Now, you may be more fortunate than I, but I did get to know her better than you did. Oh, now here's an interesting question. I have two friends who are in a conflict, and they demand that I choose, even though I don't really want to, because I like them both. What should I do? Well, I'll need more information, but I'm assuming the questioner holds certain firm moral principles. Well, the first obvious question would have to be, what kind of conflict is this? What are the issues at stake? Are they important or not? For instance, if one of them cheated with the wife of the other, and he says, well, you just remain my friend anyway, that's just our business, then you obviously, if you hold that right code of morality, you choose the other one and let the first one go. But I'm assuming that it's not a clear-cut moral issue like that, unless they don't tell you at all. If they tell you, we have this war, we want you to side with us, but we're not telling you why, then my inclination would be to say goodbye to both of them. Because they're both asking you for something irrational to make a decision on no basis. But if you find out that it's something you don't consider that crucial, you promised to buy my tie for $10 and now you're only offering me $7.50, etc. If that's the kind of issue, then you have to decide, is this, you know, what does it prove that they're making such a fight about it? Why is it so important? And again, either they can explain it or they can't. But to me, the situation smacks of something funny to begin with. Because if they want you to make a choice and they know you don't have the basis, there is something really wrong. something phony about the conflict, or something, some viewer they have, that they can walk all over you and get whatever they want, and I think you shouldn't let them do it. Here's one. When is the last time you got a question that seriously stumped you? And was that an exciting experience? Well, actually, the last time that that happened was on the podcast. And one member of a relationship, they had broken up, and he had been cheating on the partner. They each now were hooked up with somebody else, but they were still friends. But he knew that if the partner knew that he had cheated, they could have to dissolve the friendship. So he felt he owed it, and on the other hand, he wanted to keep the friendship. What should he do? Of course, my instinct is tell the truth, but on the other hand, I felt if they have as distant a friendship as he said, I would like him to suffer in his own mind for being dishonest and not have the catharsis of laying the guilt on the other one. So the other one could, you know, if it's a light relationship, could go on untouched. But I'm not sure that's right either. So I told him he'd have to decide. I couldn't go any further. He said, was that an exciting experience? Well, only because I'm eager to take those on the air every once in a while, so that those are my answer to, quote, Peacock thinks he knows everything. So I deliberately pepper one of those in every once in a while. I don't know. Now, somebody on one side?
Yes. What part of the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, do you think is good, and what part do you think is bad?
Oh, no, I'm not a legal scholar. I'm in Interstate Commerce Clause, obviously, is wrong, and eminent domain, but I'm not a legal scholar. There are so many competent philosophers of law. The last time I read the Constitution, I think, was when I applied for citizenship in 1960-something. So, yeah.
What kind of books do you think would be really important for objectivist intellectuals to try to write in the future?
You mean if they were pursuing the success of objectivism and not their own desires?
Yes, hopefully.
That's why I don't answer that. It's important for them to pursue the kind of books that they want to write, that are important to them, that utilize their talents. They should not choose what you're doing. Writing is hard. I mean, it's worse than hell, but at least it's hard to choose that, because that'll give other people some good ideas. It's to me like going on the rack so that somebody else can go to the movies. I mean, I would never dream of a thing like that. You define what you're interested in, what you like, what subjects you don't. Writing should be like, for me, it's always like a giant crossword puzzle, like a three-dimensional cosmic crossword puzzle. I have all these parts, and I can't figure out how this fits together. Like, if I say about religion is true, well, like, what about Nazism and Marx? What about skepticism? What about this? And it's like a million pieces, and you have an overall theory, but you're doing it not because when it's over, you know, it'll save the world. You're doing it because you want to solve this. You want to understand this. You want to make this whole issue, which is, you know, is so important to you, really clear. And then, even if, you know, it's not published when you die, you solved it. I truly felt it. I had to feel that, because if I wrote with the idea of saving the world, you know, it'd be impossible. I couldn't, you know, the report would be finished each time before I finished the book. I have somebody else here. Yeah.
This is also about your own writing. When you found the writing experience itself to be so unpleasant, what were some of the things that you would do to keep the big picture in your context and stay motivated through the difficult long periods of that?
I don't know. Is this of general interest, or is this too technical? Well, in my earlier years where it was the worst, Ayn Rand was the person, because I would reach despair. I couldn't write this, or I couldn't understand it, or I couldn't tolerate what was going on, you know, in the world, etc. And you just had to, you know, be with her. She would straighten out, you know, whatever your errors were, show you what premise was confusing you, and then show you where there was hope. And she was always, however negative things were, she always wanted to uphold at some point a note of the positive. You know, like for instance, typically we spend an evening, well, not always negative, but many times, you know, analyzing some philosophy that's really bad, trying to understand it and so on. And then I would say, well, it's late, so you know, we have to go. You have to say something positive first. You can't just go out on that note. So we had to have some positive remark, some, you know, story we heard or whatever, just to switch the orientation, because she wanted you to go out with the idea that it's a benevolent universe, and however bad this is, reality is still, you know, the way she saw. So she was marvelous in being able to do that. The very fact that her reaction to what was going on in the world was anger, which a lot of people criticized her for, rather than despair, was invigorating, because if she saw something, some of the things going on, she wouldn't say, well, that's life, it's hopeless, I need a drink. You know, she would, you know, the words she used, she would, and that in itself was energizing. You know, she wouldn't tolerate that that kind of evil could exist. They didn't belong here. She would fight it to the death. You see what I mean? And it's that kind of positive energy that she emanated even when she was negative, which is really the thing that saved me, not only her benevolence, but her anger, that she just never gave in emotionally. She never said, well, that's it, I can't do it. In terms of later, I don't know, I can't think of anything I did after that book to make it. I really can't. I just paced back and forth till I could get to the desk. And I increased the amount of pacing. Now, she had solitaire, you know. She couldn't write without solitaire. And every time she got stuck, she would just play solitaire at the desk over and over till she got... And I tried that, but I got too involved in the games. But finally, you just get started, you know. I wish I had an answer. I wish there was some... I don't know anything other than that, though. That, keep it all in your mind, you know.